up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. You know, rivalries are great in sports because you get this good back and forth where I don't like you, you don't like me, we don't like each other. There's a long history of that. When you share rivalries, it kind of loses a little bit of its luster, meaning if it's four or five different ones, it's kind of, you know, it can get, you don't put a lot of emphasis on one. Would I call the Cowboys and Giants a rivalry? Yes, they're in the NFC East and they've played each other twice a year forever and a day. Would I say it's the premier rivalry in the NFL? No, and I don't even know if the Cowboys look at the Giants as their premier rival. Maybe it's more Redskins. Maybe it's the Eagles. I don't know. But I know this, and you watched it last night on Monday Night Football. Dallas is owning this relationship with the Giants. They have now won six straight against New York, winning 37-18. A game that was close until the Cowboys started to pull away in the fourth quarter. The Giants had some opportunities, but Daniel Jones as a rookie is still continuing to grow into that role. But the Cowboys, coming off a bye week, took care of business, now sweep the series once again. It's the first time, and I brought this up yesterday, it was the first time Dallas had played the Giants without Eli Manning since early in 2004. And Jones turned the ball over three times. But that's not any credit to Dallas, because he's been doing that the entire time since he took over the starting job in week three. It seems like every game, all we hear about is Daniel Jones turning over the ball. But credit the Cowboys. You got to go on the road and win. You got to go on the road and win on Monday night. And they did. And they go to 5-3. And they're keeping pace with the Eagles as those two teams battle it out. But this might be a little bit more about New York, as New York continues to stick with the rookie quarterback and letting him grow into the role for the future. But what does that signal to everybody else on the team that is saying, look, I'm not growing in my role, and I want to win some football games? And at one point in the season, despite our struggles, there was an opportunity for us to be in the mix with Dallas and the Philadelphia Eagles. And instead, Daniel Jones's growth became more important than us maybe contending. Or did the two go hand in hand? We'll talk about that next. Jones's issues are a concern to me, and I'll tell you why next. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. So the Cowboys went on Monday Night Football last night. I wouldn't say it was an entertaining game, except for the cat that ran on the field. That was kind of awesome.
Cat was awesome.
The cat was awesome. It was neat because my wife was in the room with me and she goes, he's so scared. And I go, he's a cat. He's probably petrified, but he's a cat. He'll figure it out. Cats are more witty than dogs. I love dogs, but cats are more witty. Yeah, cats are more like, I got this. I'll figure this out. I'm a little worried, but I got this. Dogs would just freak out. They'd be like, oh my God. And they just curl up. Cat's got this.
And probably just take a dump on the field.
That's probably true. Probably true. By the way, what was it? Westwood One, Kevin Harlan had the call on this. This was great. Here's a piece of audio. Kevin Harlan was, you know, because this is what Kevin Harlan does. He's a great play-by-play announcer. And I don't like the fact that his career is starting to get defined by these wacky calls that he does. Didn't he do a streaker one time somebody coming on the field?
It's one of the great calls,
one of the greatest calls ever. He tried to top it with this cat call, but here's Kevin Harlan on the call. This is Westwood One.
He's who brought walking. The cat? He's walking to the three. He's at the two. And the cat is in the CDW red zone. CDW, people who get it now, a policeman, a state trooper has come on the field, and the cat runs into the end zone. That is a touchdown. And the cat is elusive. kind of like Barkley and Elliott. But he didn't know where to go. Look at, they're trying to corner him, and they got him in the end zone. There are state troopers all around this cat, which now climbs up into the stands, and the fans are running for their life. Now it goes back on the field again, and it's running in the back of the end zone, and it runs up the tunnel.
See, that is great. Now, I heard a version where the color commentator was talking a little too much during it, and I was kind of hoping a producer would be in his ear going, let Kevin Harlan do this. Don't interrupt. Don't.
Please, you know, be
just,
quiet.
Just be quiet. Like, don't interrupt him. This is kind of what he does, and this is really, really cool. So that was the cat running on the field. That was bizarre. So I go to Twitter because I then go, okay, does somebody have the cat story, right? Does somebody know why the cat's there? And I find the answer from a reporter that actually asked security at MetLife Stadium, hey, how did a cat get in here? And the security said, oh, there's a bunch of cats here. They kind of live here. They're stray cats. They find their way into this stadium and people feed them food. So they hang out. And I thought, you know what? He's right, but I never think about this when I go to stadiums. Do you?
No.
Do you ever think that there are probably stray animals that muggle their way into a stadium to go, what's around here? Any popcorn lying around?
It's one of those weird things. Like,
November 17th is National
Take
a Hike
One of the things
Day
I know is that, like, at Disneyland.
Yes, Disneyland, same thing.
There's a whole family of cats that live there.
Yeah, that's right.
And every once in a while, you'll see one. I mean, I've seen one at Disneyland. Like, oh, there it goes. But they actually let the cats live there because it keeps the mice population
down.
That's a
good point.
Which is ironic.
Wouldn't this work for stadiums, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the last thing you want to see. If you're walking through a stadium and, you know, you're standing in line to go to the bathroom, all of a sudden a rat runs across the breezeway. You don't, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a grown man, you're still going to be, you know, creeped out by a rat running through.
Yeah, that is true. And you're right about Disneyland. That was a good point. It's a little ironic.
That they employ cats to keep mice away.
Keep the mouse away. But yeah, this was, but I, you know, I don't think I've ever seen I know there's a famous black cat that ran across the Cubs in 1969.
Yes.
And that's kind of famous.
Yeah, because didn't it end up being a curse?
Yeah, the Mets ended up winning the World Series. Yeah. And but the Giants last night, little cat running across. All right, so here's my take on Daniel Jones. Okay. I'm all for Daniel Jones getting the start over Eli Manning. He was drafted in the first round, and the team is looking to the future, and Jones took over in week three and won two games, beat the Buccaneers and then beat the Redskins. And since then, they've lost five in a row. I'm all for rookies developing and growing, but I'm going to let you know how the media works sometimes. When Daniel Jones was drafted, there were a lot of people, including myself, that was really perplexed by the decision for the Giants to take the sixth pick and take a quarterback out of Duke that most of us hadn't seen play when we thought there were better quarterbacks on the board, or the fact that they needed some defensive help. And there was still like Josh Allen out of Kentucky that was still available for them. And they didn't take him. They took Daniel Jones. Many Giant fans were up in arms. The media in New York was up in arms. But then what happens is guys like Joe Testashore on Monday Night Football or Mike Tirico or guys like that who kind of stay out of that sort of opinionated kind of conversation, look and say all the good things that they're seeing from Daniel Jones, and then kind of remind everybody that everybody hated this pick. It's kind of a cool thing to say, like, boy, and now Daniel Jones is a starter. Boy, people really ripped him apart when the Giants drafted him, but he's a good young quarterback growing into the role. That's fine. We may or may not be wrong about Daniel Jones. Maybe he has a great career. Maybe he's fantastic. Maybe he stinks. We don't know yet, but the Giants have made their decision. This is where they're going. When you're a rookie into this league, we know that the league is faster and the windows are closed and all of those things. And there's an adjustment that you have to make. But Daniel Jones, since he took over this job in week three, has had 16 turnovers, fumbles and interceptions. That's tied for the most in the NFL. Now, I expect Daniel Jones to turn the ball over. I don't think he shouldn't be throwing. He's going to throw interceptions. He's going to fumble the ball occasionally. But 16 is way too much. And I think there is a point where you can do two things with the Jones decision to play quarterback. You can A, say, look, it's the right decision for the organization. They've got to move on from Eli Manning. And two, also say, but he better get his act together and stop turning over the ball. Like, fumbleitis is something you should have been cured of a long time ago. I know the NFL is tougher, and I know the NFL is faster, but this is silly. I mean, he fumbles the ball all the time. And it's not even so much picks. It's fumbles. He's got to do a better job of this. And I don't think it's wrong to say, hey, it's okay if you want to stick with this kid, make him run through the whole season. If he's healthy, he's your starter, all of that. But also, look, are you giving up on the season? You should at 2-7. But there was a point where there was an opportunity for the Giants to be in the hunt with the Cowboys and the Eagles. There was a time where Dallas was struggling. There was a time when the Eagles were struggling. Remember, the Cowboys lost three straight and were 3-3 on the season. The Eagles were struggling too. There was a time where the Giants had an opportunity to say, look, let's be in the hunt here. What do we always say? Win the division. It doesn't matter if you're 9-7. Win the division. And they elected to stay with a rookie. And that rookie, because of these turnovers, have added to the problems on this team. And there's multiple problems on this team. Defensively, they're terrible. But turning the ball over three times doesn't exactly help your chance to win a game. And the Giants have now took that opportunity that they had and flushed it down the toilet. Now they're 2-7, and they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. They took the narrative that people have been talking about with them when they were wondering about, well, do we stick with Eli or go with the rookie? When everybody says, well, you're not a very good football team, you might as well go with the rookie. The Giants are supposed to say to the public, you know, but we still think we're a pretty good football team, and we're going to try to win football games, even though you armchair scouts and analysts and commentators all think we should just give up on the season. Nobody in the NFL gives up on the season after week two. But the Giants almost said, yeah, you're right. We're sticking with this kid. And he's costing them games. Now, it's too late now. They're 2-7. The best they can do if they win out is 9-7. I ain't going to win this division. It just isn't. But there was a chance. And I don't know what the answer is. Is it going back to Eli Manning? Well, this is this is a psychological issue. You don't want to work with Daniel Jones, who gets a start, and then he gets taken away, and, you know, all of that. But if I'm on the Giants and the whole goal is to develop the young quarterback and I'm going out there getting hurt, playing hurt, sitting in ice tubs afterwards, you know, feeling the pain the next morning, getting shots to alleviate some of the pain. My wife's got to help me put on a jacket on Tuesday or Monday or whatever day it is after a win or loss. I'd be a little upset that the direction of the team is, let's make sure this kid gets ready by giving him as much reps as possible. And if he's turning the ball over all, you know, to a point where we're losing games, well, that's part of the overall growth of the organization. Now, Eli Manning is, you know, he's lost his job. I'm not saying go back to him, but I don't know what the answer is. But I think if you're Pat Shermer, you have every right to go, hey, it's time to get critical now. It's one thing we can all talk about the poise. We can all talk about how he's got a better arm than you thought and all of those fancy things. But the reality of it is he's got to stop turning the ball over. I don't care if he's a rookie or not. Some of these are inexcusable. Some of his throws are terrible. Some of his throws had no business being thrown in the first place. That's rookie development, but it's also about time after 7 weeks you stop doing that. And turning the ball over is awful. Some of his fumbles, he's carrying the ball loosely. He's reaching. You don't reach. When you're a quarterback, don't reach. You're not likely to hold on to the football. I think there is proper criticism here for a rookie. I normally don't like it because I know how long it takes to grow in this league, and we should never expect a rookie to get a start and be outstanding. Because when they are outstanding, you know, we kind of go, yeah, this is pretty cool. When Baker Mayfield surprised us last year, when Dak Prescott won 13 games, all of those things, all of those times that we've seen guys come right into the league and play really well, those are special. The reality of it is your rookie is supposed to struggle, and he's struggling. He's really, really struggling. But they've got to figure that out. Because you can help him grow, and you can also put your players in a position to try to win a couple of football games to close out the season. All right, coming up next. Yesterday we talked about Willie Taggart and the fact that he got fired from SNU. Florida State's looking for a coach. I had my voice yesterday, but now there's a rumor there's a guy on their radar that they absolutely want. Who is it and why I think it might not work for him next, SB Nation AM.
listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, improve visibility and save money at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop by for their See Better, Drive Safer sale, where you can earn a $15 gift card after mail-in rebate when you purchase either Sylvania headlight bulbs or Bosch Focus or Trico Titan wiper blades. They'll even install your wiper blades free while you wait. How great is that? Don't risk your safety because of poor visibility. Let the professional parts people at O'Reilly help you find just what you need. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Okay, so yesterday I told you that Florida State fired Willie Taggart, their head football coach. They're a miserable program right now. Didn't go to a bowl last year, likely not to go to a bowl this year. Maybe they can turn some stuff around and get the two wins they need or whatever. So Florida State looking for a coach. And I said yesterday, Lane Kiffin. I think Lane Kiffin would be a perfect hire.
I think that'd be great. And then there was rumors that he's interested.
He should be interested because after, you know, you should be wanting to get out of Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, I mean,
right? What
can he do there?
It's Boca, but it's, you know,
Conference
USA.
Isn't Boca just a gigantic retirement community?
It is. It's Boca. I mean, whenever I hear Boca, I never hear young people say, I'm going to Boca. Yeah. You know what I hear? I hear like my uncle has worked in New York and goes, I've got to retire to Boca. That's what I hear.
I feel like there's just bingo games everywhere.
Yep. And early bird dinners.
Early bird dinners.
Specials, right? Come in at 4 for our steak dinner for $6.99 with an all you can eat salad bar.
I also feel that it's probably a great place to be a police officer because there's no crime after 9.
Right.
But a terrible place to be a paramedic.
Yeah, very true. Very true. A lot of people walking the malls, the abandoned malls.
Exactly.
With their sneakers, getting their little exercise. All of that. That's Boca.
Getting their steps in.
So why wouldn't you want to go to Tallahassee if you're Lane Kiffin? Well, if Florida State has their way, You know who they're very interested in and it is number one on their list?
Hit me.
Your man, Mike Leach, Washington State.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Wouldn't that be fun? Mike Leach in the ACC?
Yeah, instead of wasting away in the Pac-12, he'd definitely get more TV time.
But let me ask you this. This is why I said in the tease that I don't know if it's a good move for him. I think professionally it's a good move for him, right? It's Washington State's a nice program, but going to Tallahassee in Florida State, it's one of the premier programs in the history of college football. But don't you feel because of the pressure at Florida State, the intensity of the fans, the expectations of the fans, that Mike Leach can't be as jovial a lot of the times as he is, can't be as off the cuff like we love him for?
I think he could still be him.
You think so?
I think he's the only one that could get away with that.
Because this is my thought. Just picture this, right? It's, I don't know, opening up the season, and Florida State's got, they're going to play Alabama, I think, in a couple of years. So let's say Florida State's going to open up the year against Alabama, right? Alabama's the preseason number one, right? And they go up to him and they go, hey, all right, Mike, what do you think about your quarterback and his ability to get through the Alabama defense? And he goes, you know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about aliens. Don't you think the people in Tallahassee go, no, you're not going to talk about aliens. You're going to tell us exactly how you're going to beat the Alabama defense. I want to talk about pirates. No, no, no. Let's get back on track. How are you going to beat Florida this week? How are you going to beat Clemson this week?
I would amend it to this, that Florida State University employees might feel that way.
Okay.
But I think Florida would welcome it. Yes.
Because the fan base.
The people. Because the people of Florida, just they give us all the great goodies.
True. That is true.
And I think those might be his people. He might sit up there and say, I want to talk aliens.
That's a good point.
And he might have a cult following.
So what you're saying is that the people who like are at Florida State will be like, nope, stop talking about aliens. And then the people like, no, 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 no. Let the coach speak about the aliens because I got abducted by one when I was outside Ocala 6 years ago and nobody talked about it. And now I got a coach, my favorite football team, and he's talking about it. So talk on, coach. Tell us about them aliens because I know I got abducted. That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
That could be good. That could you're right. That could be good. I just think when I think of Washington, and I've never been to Washington, and I think it's a beautiful state from the pictures. I can't wait to go. I'd love to see it. When I think of Washington, I think of a laid back, really sort of inviting kind of fan base. Want to win. Don't get me wrong. Passionate. Want to win. All of that. But when Mike Leach goes, hey, let's talk about mascots like he did the other day, a couple weeks ago, I thought that was so fun. And people in Washington are like, man, this coach is a barrel of laughs. I just love covering him. But I just think in Florida State, they're like, coach, listen, we need 7 wins. We need 8 wins. Stop talking nonsense. Who's the starting quarterback this week? Dan Mullen doesn't talk like this at Gainesville. And I worry about that because the image of Mike Leach is a good football coach. But I love the fact that he's willing to go a little off the board and talk about some great fun stuff. If he's in Tallahassee, I'm wondering if they're just going to squash that. We don't have time for that nonsense around here. We got Gators to beat.
Yeah, but will he make the move? Because he's built up a program at Washington
really
State.
Has. He's really has.
It's almost becoming quarterback U once again.
He really has. And
the problem I see with him is the fact that one college versus the other college, I mean, literally opposite sides of the country.
Yeah, no kidding. And he's got another quarterback in Anthony Gordon that's leading the country in passing yards. Yep. And he's not just leading the country in passing yards, people. He's leading the country by over 500 yards over Joe Burrow, who we love. He's got 3,300 yards already this season. He's got a good program there. Sometimes you think moving up the ladder, that extra step is what you wanted. Mike Leach has been at Texas Tech, right? He might want to be the head coach at Florida State, but he also just might be like, nah, you know what? I'm pretty happy here. I like the Pac-12. I like living here. I like Pullman. I like the conference. I like the scenic area. I'm cool. And sometimes, and here's the other problem. You could have an ego where, like, when you're young, you're a young coach, and you're like in your 40s, they call on you to resurrect a program, and you're like, I'm in. I'm all in. But sometimes you get older, and you go, listen, I don't want to rebuild a program. I like what I'm doing now. I like the grind of what I'm doing. I'm content. I think that's the big word, content. Now, maybe Leach is interested, maybe not. I don't know, but he's their number one target. But Florida State, Lane Kiffin's your guy. Trust me, Lane Kiffin's your guy. When I got on the Lane Kiffin bandwagons all of a sudden, man, I loved it when he got let go at USC, man. I laughed and laughed and laughed some more.
Will he ever get rid of that stigma?
I wonder about that. That's funny that you bring that up. I wonder about that. I said this yesterday? He has had more stories of his coaching career by the time he was 35 than I think people have in a lifetime. Right.
Yeah, I mean, because he got hired by Tennessee. Tennessee was all about him. And then he pretty much ditched him for a hotter girlfriend.
Right. He totally did.
Literally, brought her to the party, got her a drink, and then looked across the room and saw the hotter girlfriend that he wanted to go after. And he
right.
was just like, you know your way home, right?
Right.
I'll see you later.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the hotter girlfriend dumps him in public out in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
This is fantastic. It was like, for Tennessee, that was the perfect ending for him.
Raiders, Tennessee, and USC all by the time he was 35 years old. You know what I kept wondering the whole time he was getting these jobs? I'm like, what in the world does he have on the football world that is enabling him to land these opportunities?
Because I don't want to say it was just all his dad's doing.
It couldn't have been just his father.
I mean, his dad is a respected coach.
Oh, and I know people say, well, he was one of the youngest, brightest minds. Yeah, but still.
Yeah, but he
the
was,
Raiders the, at 31 or 30, was, whatever it was.
The youngest, brightest mind coach was during a time when it wasn't working.
Right.
That was the other
thing. Right,
everyone
that's
was
right.
trying to move to the younger mind, but everyone was like, oh, it's not working. Why are we doing this?
Right. That's exactly right. All right. The NFL now has wrapped up week 10. Week 9, I should say, as we continue to look back on Sunday, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. All right, it is a Tuesday. So we'll have the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next hour. We'll also have our top five and bottom five. But just to get a feel, I keep looking at this and saying, okay, we're now done 9 weeks of the NFL. Are we still waiting on storylines with teams? Are we still waiting for teams to pop? Or do we have a real idea of where teams are? The tricky part about doing that is in the NFL, and I saw this last night when they were showing the playoff picture. When they did that infamous playoff picture, they show you the division winners, and then they show you the wild card teams, like Buffalo is a wild card team at 6-2. Well, the Steelers are in there at 4-4, and I really don't have any idea how good or bad the Steelers really are. They win games I don't think they should. Sometimes they put out a performance where I think they're lackadaisical, but then I realize, they still got a backup quarterback. But they're in the playoff hunt at 4-4. I don't know if that's going to mean anything. The Raiders are in the hunt at 4-4. I have no idea still what kind of team the Raiders are. They did do pretty good, I guess, on these road games, enough to kind of sort of stay in the hunt. I mean, obviously, we know how good the Niners are. We know how good the Patriots are. We know how good the Seahawks are and whatnot. But there are just teams in the middle of the road where I feel like there's an identity that still hasn't been really defined. You know, in teams are defining their success different ways. If you're the Cowboys, right, you have a half-game lead over Philadelphia in the division. Okay, the Cowboys should make the playoffs, right? If they don't make the playoffs, I'd be really surprised. But they should be one of the teams at least vying for the division or at least a wild card. Unless, of course, things go a little haywire. But that's not the way the Cowboys are defining success. They need to get past the divisional round. They haven't gotten past the divisional round in forever. Right? So they're not looking at just making the postseason. They are like, hey, listen, we got to either go to the Super Bowl or at least go to the NFC Championship game. Right? We know how good the Green Bay Packers are despite losing to the Chargers. That seems to be a blip on the radar. You know, the Vikings losing to Kansas City, that seems to be a blip on the radar. They're still pretty good. Saints are coming off a bye week. But the Rams at 5-3, is it possible the Rams don't make the playoffs with as much talent as they have? They haven't blown up, right? They're not dealing with an injury. They're not dealing with a backup quarterback. I mean, you can make the case about Todd Gurley and whatnot, but the team didn't explode and everybody take off. That's how difficult it is to sort of look at teams and say, who are you? Where are you? But let me tell you this. If I'm looking at the Steelers and the Raiders, and those are two teams at 4-4, and you could put them in the hunt category, because right now you would put the Steelers are in second place in the AFC North. The teams that you would put in the hunt in the wild card would be Buffalo and Indianapolis. Everybody else, 4-4, 4-5. Isn't that where the Chargers are right now? I mean, the yeah. Chargers. I mean, are we? We're not going to throw them out, are we?
Yeah, but let's be real. When the ESPN flashed that graphic yesterday of teams in the playoff hunt, and they had the Chargers listed at number 11. I mean, yeah, technically they're in the playoff hunt. I laughed. I couldn't help it. I was like, this is not a playoff team. I'm sorry.
No, and that's the thing, right? We have an identity. We think we see a team and say, no, you're not. There's too many things wrong with that. But if the wild card ends, if the final wild card ends up being a team that's 9-7,
yeah, I mean,
there
yeah.
you know, right? There you are.
But
the difficulty you're right, because the difficulty in the AFC is, and I know things will change because we still got a lot of football left, is right now, as we speak right now, the playoffs would be the divisional winners of the Patriots, Ravens, Texans, and Chiefs. The Bills are securing one wild card spot as of today with a 6-2 record. All right. So everybody else is vying for one, and that means Indianapolis, Jacksonville, Tennessee, the Chargers, the Raiders, the Steelers. They're all in that category of the in the hunt category, because there really is, it's a one game difference between 5-3 and 4-4, right? So the Indianapolis Colts can hold on to it right now, but everybody else is breathing down their neck technically. Now look at the NFC, and you've got Dallas, Packers, Saints, and Niners. If you're the Eagles, or the Cowboys for that matter, depending on how that division flip-flops and goes down, watch out and be careful.
because your wild card teams in the NFC are the 7-2 Seahawks right now and the 6-3 Minnesota Vikings. So don't be messing around so much in the division where you're hot, you're cold, you're hot, you're cold, you win, you lose, you win, you lose. Be careful, because it could keep you out of the playoffs when it's all said and done, because the conference is deep. Right now, again, believe me, I get it. We got 7 more weeks of this, and all of this could shape out. We could be laughing at the idea that we even thought the Vikings could be a playoff team. They could lose 4 in a row and all of a sudden be a 500 team again. I have no idea. But if you're the Bears, what do you do if you're the Bears except try to win out, right, at 3-5? I mean, you're in the NFC, for crying out loud. You're going to be in the wild card race with 3 wins and 5 losses right now? I mean, it'd be impossible. It's almost impossible to picture. Look at the Rams. Rams are in the same boat. Last year's dominating Super Bowl team, you know, that was putting up all these offensive points. Kind of stagnant now. So, again, it's hard to feel an identity. I'm with you on the Steelers. I said this yesterday. You have a chance to root for your team to make the playoffs. Make the playoffs. Because if you're hovering at that point at the end of the season, it's not you're not going to wake up one day either. Hey, we're either going to be a wild card or have the second pick in the draft. It doesn't work that way. You're either going to have the wild card or you're going to be picking 19th. So why not pick 25th, right, and make the playoffs and lose? Because you never know what happens. Root for making the playoffs. I hate when people say that to me, though. I don't even want my team to make the playoffs. Then what are you doing? Then what are you rooting for?
Why are you a fan?
Listen, if you are 1-7 and you're the Jets, root for your team. You can root for your team to get a high draft pick.
Right.
But if it's December and you're in the hunt category and you got to like win out and have this team lose and this team lose, why aren't you pulling for that?
But every year when we get to like the week 15 and they pull out the hunt category and you see,
oh, that's ridiculous.
You know, a team that's, you know, at that moment in time is like 5-7, you know, or 6-7 or something like that. Are you realistically thinking, oh, you know what? 3 more wins, we're in.
I remember a couple of years ago, somebody wrote an article, I think it was at SB Nation, on a lousy Jacksonville team not being eliminated from the playoffs despite this terrible record. And they went out and figured all the different categories. They went completely nuts how the Jags, who were like miserable, terrible, terrible team, just awful, how they were technically not eliminated from the playoffs because of all these different ways they could win out, and that would give them the tiebreaker over this team, and that would give them the tiebreaker over this team. And they were going like 6 deep on the list of tiebreakers you could have in the NFL. Listen, as a kid, I used to play that game all the time. I loved it.
I still do. You're the playoff generator?
It's so much fun. Yeah.
I still do the playoff generator.
All right. So
when we get to week 15. I mean, it's a blast.
Oh, I'll tell a quick story. Late 80s, all right? The Steelers were a team that started off, I think it was 89. They started off with 2 bad losses, terrible losses, but then they started picking up the year and started kind of winning games. And it was Christmas weekend. It was Christmas weekend. And we were in Brooklyn at my grandmother's house. And the Steelers needed to win. I mean, it was all these different combinations. The Steelers needed to win, obviously. And then they needed like the Raiders to lose, and the Raiders were playing the Giants. They ended up going to the game. It was freezing. And then they needed like Cincinnati to lose on Monday Night Football. They needed the Browns to lose or something. It was all weird. Oilers to lose, all that. Remember when they used to have, and this is, you know, obviously way before the internet. Remember when they used to have that phone number you could call? Like you had to listen to like gambling stuff, but they'd give you scores.
Yep.
It's like a 1-800 number. It was free, but you had to listen to a lot of gambling ads, like guys touting. But then they would give you up-to-date scores. I remember being in my grandmother's house, my cousins and I calling this number every 15 minutes because we couldn't get the score of the Steelers game. And I was desperate. I mean, desperate to find out. And then I remember getting home from Monday Night Football and the Bengals lost and the Steelers made it. And I was like, there had to be 5 things that had to happen for them to make it. And it all happened. It all worked out. I still like doing that. I still have fun with that. I still have a good time with that. But sometimes, you know, it's like a parlay in betting. Well, you got like, I got a 5-team parlay and 4 come out. And then there's always that one game that throws you off. And you're like, my God, how did I get 4 out of 5? I needed 5 out of 5. And that's the way the playoff thing works. But I remember one of my first jobs when I was covering the Patriots out of college, sales guy came to me. The Patriots were a team second year with Bledsoe and Parcells. And a sales guy came to me and said, hey, can you do me a favor? My client's a big Patriots fan. He's, you know, he's paying money all the, for all these Patriot programming that we had at the station. He said, can you come up with playoff scenarios? And I remember, like, serious research. This was before I could Google it. I had to really dig in. I had to get the standings. I had to get the schedules. I had to call my father at work because my father knew all this stuff. I'm like, all right, so what does it go after that? Conference records, common opponents. And then at the end, it's like coin flip. It's like coin flip. You got to come up with another reason than coin flip. Play three card Monty or something like that. Don't coin flip. But that's the way that's the kind of fun way to do this, because there isn't runaways, right? You're not winning it's not like baseball where you can win your division by 18 games, right? You know, and clinch the thing in July. You're in this hunt with a lot of teams. This is the parity the league has built into it. But going back to identities, do we know about the Dolphins? Of course. Do we know about the Jets? Of course. Do we know about the Bengals? Yes. Do we know about the Browns? Yeah, probably. But are the Colts a good team? I mean, are the Colts a good football team? Are you scared of the Colts when you play them?
See, for me, the Colts, I think they make the playoffs, but they're going to be bounced early.
Yeah. Jacoby Brissett's MRI has got a sprained ankle or something.
Yeah, I don't know how intimidating they are. Right. I think right now, even teams right now aren't that intimidated by them.
No, I agree. Well, the Rams. The Steelers are playing the Rams. I think the Rams are going to win, but I'm not petrified of the Rams like I was last year.
No, I wouldn't. I think that game's going to be a lot closer than people are thinking right now.
And I think the Rams, I think this is a perfect example of how the NFL brings everything back to the norm a little bit, right? Where you have these teams that just have these magical years, and you think that the identity of the whole league is going to change, and then the league goes, not quite. Trust us, not quite. You chill out a little bit on that before you start thinking that you got to go out there and start putting up 45 points a game. It'll come back to the norm. And what are we celebrating with the two best teams in the NFL now? The fact that their defenses are outstanding, that they're one of a kind. The best matchup is going to be Monday night, Russell Wilson against the 49ers secondary. It's one of the best. It's the best against the pass in the NFL. And Wilson has 22 touchdown passes this season. It's going to be a blast. So again, we're 9 weeks in. We're getting a feel for it. All right, again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's, as we roll along on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio
and on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, and this hour of SB Nation Radio is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. College basketball is back tonight.
What?
I know.
That's you. No.
Don't blink. It's life is going too fast, Ron Culver. You can't even settle in and enjoy autumn.
Are we on like high speed since late August, early beginning of September?
I think we are.
With sports? I mean, it just seems like it's too rapid. I completely forget that the NHL season's almost a month old now.
It is. There are I didn't realize when I was kind of perusing hockey and whatnot, and there was people angry that this team had lost like five in a row, and I'm like, didn't the season just start? And I'm like, oh no, it actually is a month old. There's a number of games under their belt to get kind of mad. Like Detroit's not playing well. Like the Red Wings really stink and whatnot. But tonight, college basketball, two big games at Madison Square Garden, Kentucky, Michigan State. That is 1-2. Spartans are 1. And then Kansas at 3, Duke at 4. They're matching up too at Madison Square Garden. Here's my thing about college basketball. All right. College basketball for me is, how do I put this? It's like being friends with somebody, really good friends with somebody that you know is incredibly flawed and you're uncomfortable with at times. Like he cheats on his wife or something, or he drinks too much or something, but you're still friends with him and you love him and he's a good dude and you like hanging out with him. Or it's like dating a woman that you know is terrible for you. She takes your money or whatnot, but you can't seem to let
her
go.
Put you down, abuse you.
Yeah, put you down, abuse you.
Takes your man
like,
card.
I love college basketball. I love the atmosphere of college basketball. I love the tournament. I love the conference tournament. I love college basketball. But you know it's dirty, right? Like, you know it's dirty, and you know it needs cleaning up. Like, they just had an FBI investigation into its practice.
Yeah, you don't use past tense.
Yeah, it's still going
on.
It's still going on. So it's this thing where I love it, and I'm not getting rid of it. I love it. I love settling and watching good matchups, good college hoops. I love it. But it's, you know, it's, there's this filthy element to the sport that you just can't, at least I can't. I don't know about anybody else. I just can't ignore sometimes.
And that's why I think, like, for college basketball, though, it's a good fit for them because they tend to fly under the radar until late February, beginning of March.
Right. Completely. But
we're not keen to what's going on over there. We know that something's happening, but we're not really sure what it is. And then all of a sudden, late February, March comes in, and we're like, oh, we're all in.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you got this scandal going on? Why? How did I miss that one?
I don't want to give the... Listen, when early game's on, sometimes it's just on my TV because I just have it on, and I'm not intensely watching it, and, you know... But, you know, like Thanksgiving holiday, I love, like, the when they play in Alaska or they play in Atlantis or whatever, Maui. You know, Maui. I love it. I love the sport.